From the land grant university in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of June, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. We'll hear from Frayn Olson today, agricultural economist at North Dakota State University. We'll discuss with him the upcoming WASDE or World Agricultural Supply and Demand estimates, some of the supply and demand tables that they will produce, how those will be folded, of course, into the information that comes out at the end of the month related to grain stocks, and then we'll talk about policy as well with him. As we wrap up our time together, we'll also talk about the weather forecast with Mark Russo today. He's at Everstream Analytics, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at Will Ag.org. The theme music, of course, written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer and my brother, Tim Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at $4.18¾. That was up a penny and a quarter for the day. September at $4.27½, a half cent higher. And December futures unchanged, $4.46, the settlement price. July soybeans, $11.15¾, down 5¾. August, $11.21¼, 4¾ lower. And new crop November at $11.35½ for the beans, down 2 cents. Bean meal futures, $5.80 lower. The bean oil up 44 cents for the day. Wheat futures, soft red July. The delivery month up 3¼ at $5.83¼. And the hard red July at $6.29¾, up 9 cents on the day. Live cattle futures, $4.92½ lower. They're at $236.72½ for 100 pounds. Feeders at $350.70, down $3.20. And lean hogs down $1.42½ at $97.37½. Crude oil, $91.36 a barrel, 82 cents higher. Diesel fuel at $3.61 and a tenth of a cent, up 2¼ in gasoline on the wholesale price. The RBOB up 2¼ at $3.07 and 3/10 of a cent. Crude in the Brent, by the way, at $94.27 per barrel, $1.18 higher. Now here to talk about these numbers is Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net. Hello, Kurt. Thanks much. Hope you had a great weekend.
Yeah, glad to be here. This is the time of year a lot of things taking place. So, yeah, hopefully everybody had a good one and look forward to the next few weekends coming up.
Okay, sometimes at the end of our conversations, you talk about the best grilling specials. And I'm wondering about the price of beef, or maybe you're just grilling pork chops this summer. I don't know. And screwworm and how that has been incorporated into the trade in Chicago.
Well, I went in the freezer this weekend. At the bottom, I found two ribeyes I bought last winter, bone in. They were on sale for $7.99 a pound. I go, I wish I would have bought a few more of those. Unbelievable.
I bet.
My gosh. But to answer your question, yes, screwworm. It's made national news. It's created some volatility. Screwworm has been around for a while. The media has taken hold of it. And the long story short, if it keeps advancing, we could probably lose some numbers. We don't want to lose some numbers just due to the fact we're still looking at some fairly tight fat markets or fat numbers, feeder numbers, and so forth. If it was really, really, really serious, Mexico wouldn't have any cattle left, but they've got some cattle in south of the U.S. border. So it is a concern, particularly if it happened to be in your herd for the most part. You know, grain-wise is a little concerned about future demand and so forth. But it's just going to create some overall volatility. I think the market's still digesting that news. It's more of a numbers as far as available supply of fats and feeders here in the U.S. Versus consumer confidence. The consumer will hopefully continue to purchase beef here as we move forward.
A couple of things, speaking of supply and demand, crop progress reports, of course, due out this afternoon. Probably not much of an update because corn was mostly planted by the time we got to last week. So you can talk about that if you want. And then on Thursday, the World in Ag and Supply and Demand Estimate Reports are due out. What are we thinking on one or both of those reports?
Well, on the crop conditions report, we're expecting some improvement. The crops, particularly next week, will show more improvement. We're seeing some rain, if not too much rain, in some areas. But as far as the supply-demand balance, we go slightly unchanged numbers. New crop ending stocks, ag market teams looking at 1905. That's about 50 million bushels less. That's due to a pickup in a little bit of old crop corn demand. Bean ending stocks and new crop 310 left unchanged, and wheat's unchanged. More of a function of adjusting the demand more than anything. Once we get a few more of these crop conditions reports under our belt, we'll start maneuvering the yield around. The second part, too, on this afternoon's crop conditions report, a lot of analysts use those estimates in their models to project how large or how small the crop is, even though we continue, at least myself, continue feels just a beauty contest rating, but they still use that as an indicator. So it'll be interesting to see how high they start bumping this yield up on some of their estimates. But the Bart Center's weather here locally, we had 0.25 inches. North of us, there's some amounts anywhere from 3 to 6 inches. Looked like a stream train effect went across us. Illinois into Indiana, so there's some producers dealing with a little bit too much weather. But as we look forward here, there's more and more news items on the El Nino. It's been called Super El Nino, and I've heard this morning that I guess in Japan they're calling it the Godzilla El Nino. So where's Ed Kieser when we need him, Todd?
Well, in Ohio. Let's see. One last thing. I do have a question. It is about the Middle East. What impact, if any, will the continuing issues with the Strait of Hormuz have for agriculture?
I think the trades are getting kind of wore out with that news. I think crude oil is getting kind of worn out. We're kind of seeing some somewhat stability in the energy sector, particularly with as much as energy we produce here in the U.S. But back to the El Nino. That's going to affect that southern hemisphere if it stays intact more as a concern than here in the upper U.S. And you couple that with a little less fertilizer and so forth, it could spell out a fairly exciting commodity market as we move into this fall if all these factors continue to be there front and center, Todd.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Very good. Take care.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Medium. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like online on demand at WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org. There you'll also find information from the Agricultural Economist here on campus. Frayne Olson, agricultural economist at North Dakota State University with Extension there, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Frayne. Thank you much for being here. Let's start with this week's USDA report, the June WASD, or World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates. What are your thoughts about this particular report? Usually June, I think, is pretty benign, frankly.
Yeah, it is usually pretty quiet. And we're getting the pre-report industry estimates and saying, well, what do you think is going to come out? And those numbers are very close to what we saw in the May report. So again, June is usually fairly quiet. I guess the one twist or just one reminder for everybody that when USDA puts together their forecasts, especially for the demand side, the exports in particular, they use the policies, trade policy, government policies in place at the time they run their models, or when they run their estimates. And of course, the May report was run before President Trump and President Xi got together and came up with their agreement. Now, in my opinion, I really don't think USDA will make any drastic changes to their export forecasts based on that, because we still aren't really clear the details of what was in that agreement. And so until we get some more details, we get something more concrete on what the expectations are. My viewpoint is I think that June report is going to be pretty quiet, but I do once in a while get this question. It's like, well, will, based on that agreement, will USDA adjust their export forecasts? And my answer is I really don't think so, because we don't have enough details.
On the movement of grain last week in the crop progress report, I suspect they will do it this week as well. USDA reminded those who were reading the report in a little box up front, it's in gray, that's their important stuff that's not related to the report sometimes, that they are collecting data and were this past week and this week for the grain stocks report. And those numbers will come out on June 30th along with the June acreage report. And they were tallying for the June 25 hogs and pigs report as well. All of that to say that the fundamentals matter. Reports are being gathered for the end of the month at this point, and it gives us a better idea of what really we have in the way of supply and or demand, which you just touched on.
Yeah, and the both of those, I mean, of the two reports coming out at the end of the June, obviously the acreage report is going to be the one that everybody's going to be like hyper-focused on to see if we did get an adjustment or shifts from the March report on planting intentions between the corn soybean acreage. But the quarterly grain stocks is also important, especially in my opinion, especially for corn. The June report's important for wheat because that's the end of the marketing year. We get the final official inventories for the wheat complex. But from the corn perspective, we use these quarterly stocks reports as a guide or a measurement of feed consumption. From the export standpoint, we have very good weekly reports on exports. We have a pretty good idea based on ethanol production. We can back calculate on the amount of corn that goes into the ethanol sector. The big use for corn, again, is livestock, and it's very, very hard to get those feed numbers to balance out. And those quarterly stocks report become that kind of rebalancing mechanism to make sure that the actual consumption reduction in total supplies that we see is tracking with what we expect from the feed side. So it is important to follow that supply and demand. At the end of the day, I always say that too, end of the day, supply and demand wins. We get a lot of noise and a lot of other things going on in the marketplace, but at the end of the day, the supply and demand does dictate pricing.
Speaking of a lot of noise and other things going on in the marketplace, what do the politics or the policies around the globe and movement of grain and other things mean to the marketplace today?
You know, we're still watching that. My joke to farmers is, okay, look, guys, if you can tell me what's going to happen with the weather and you can tell me what's going to happen in politics, I can come pretty darn close to telling you what the market's going to do. But you got to supply those two pieces first. and everybody kind of laughs and says, well, no, that's your job. And so, yeah, it's really tricky. Right now, the big political focus is primarily on the war with the U.S. and Iran, and again, all of the ceasefire that maybe isn't really a ceasefire, and you know, the who's doing what politics to whom, and obviously the trade in energy, particularly crude oil, natural gas. Critical from that region, has a huge impact on global prices. And yeah, we do see a connection between what happens in the energy complex and what happens in the ag complex. Some of that is through what we would normally think of as supply demand, thinking about ethanol specifically and the connection of ethanol prices and gasoline prices. But what we've seen really in the futures market is also this connection through the investment community. Because we do have investors that will use commodities and a blend of commodities as part of their portfolio. And oftentimes we see when the stock market starts to drop, they reduce their exposure in the stock market. They take some of those funds and invest in commodities really as kind of a temporary holding pattern until they see some recovery in the stock market. Well, the traders in the stock market understand stocks and bonds and the financial instruments. They're not really commodity traders. And so they look to these index funds, where they're prepackaged portfolios of commodities, as a quick and easy way to be able to get into and out of this commodity complex. Well, those are prepackaged. So a large portion of that is, you know, typically 50% or more is the energy complex. But you always get some ag investments in those as well. And so when they switch and buy the indexes going after the energy, they automatically get some of their portfolio in the ag complex. And that then drives some of the things that we see in the futures markets. And these are the guys that come in and out fairly quickly. They're moving big volumes of money. And so we do tend to see some swings in the marketplace because of that. So part of the nice rally and kind of the increase we saw in prices here because of the war has been driven by that. And now that we see the stock market start stabilizing a little bit, we're seeing the energy they're bouncing around, but we're bouncing within a kind of a trading range now. They're pulling out of this commodity index and they're putting it back into the stock market. So we are seeing a lot of selling activity. And that, of course, when you have more sellers than buyers, you start to see prices go down. So I guess my assessment is, yeah, we're seeing these big price swings in the grain markets. We probably saw the pendulum swing a little too high on the upside. And my suspicion is we're seeing prices swing a little too far on the low side as well. So don't panic. Don't freak out right now. We still have a lot of growing season left. There's still a lot of uncertainty on the international trade front. I think there will be, in my opinion, I think we'll have at least one more chance at trying to do a better job of some cleaning up old crop sales and making some new crop sales. But you're going to have to be paying attention pretty quickly. I mean, these windows of opportunity are going to open and close pretty fast. So pay attention. I know a lot of farmers do that. The hard part's going to be deciding, okay, when do we pull the trigger? And that's the tricky part for all of this.
Have a number in mind, put the order in at the elevator check to see if they will fill it in the overnight if it happens to hit. Volatility comes in all the hours of the day.
That has been my mantra for a while, is you're not fast enough to chase the markets, so you better get in front of them and say, okay, at what point would I be willing to sell some more? And that's still a relatively straightforward strategy. Hard part is picking the number. I get that. But that's an effective strategy and it does work.
Thank you much. I appreciate it, Frayne.
Always a pleasure visiting. I always enjoy it.
Indeed. That's Frayne Olson. He is an agricultural economist at North Dakota State University and with Extension. Let's take a look at the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. We're now joined by Mark Russo. He is at Everstream Analytics. Hello, Mark. Thanks for being with us. We had a nice rainfall here this morning locally. I looked at the gauge, and it was an inch and three-tenths already, and that's just a great rainfall. Quite a bit of heat, a little warm, actually. I think for this time of year, you can tell me about that in these first few days of June in East Central Illinois and other parts of the Midwest. But things are, I think, looking pretty good across the Corn Belt. What do you think about as an assessment and then looking forward as to the weather?
Yes, well, Todd, the bottom line is that we are not anticipating any kind of yield-threatening weather here looking out over these next few weeks. There have been some areas here of late, you know, that have missed out on rains and other pockets that have picked up excess rainfall. But the fact now that that rainfall is becoming a bit more uniform and there's more opportunities over the next few weeks, combined with this at least current warmer than normal temperature regime that does look to change, which I'll talk about here in a bit. But overall, as we've moved into June, things are looking pretty good, and we expect things to stay that way generally as we go through the next several weeks. Now, a few specifics here with rainfall prospects. There's one kind of slower moving system impacting the Midwest right now. That's why we're seeing some of those scattered showers and thunderstorms or clusters of storms that are producing some locally heavier rainfall, some areas picking up 2, even 3 inches of rain. But then again, if they get those types of totals in a 24-hour period, then they'll likely see then, you know, 24 to 48 hours of dry conditions. So overall here with this rainfall pattern, the vast majority of the Corn Belt, not only the acreage in Illinois, but across the entire Midwest should receive, you know, at least normal rainfall totals here with at least an inch of rainfall this week. And that combined with the warmer than normal temperatures, which again are going to be in place through this week, that will accelerate crop development here across the entire Midwest. That does not look to, you know, be the start of any kind of extended, very, you know, warm stretch. In fact, next week, temperatures start to shift back to normal, even a few areas a little bit cooler than normal as a trough of low pressure settles into the central U.S.
Okay, so do tell me about the temperatures. How much above normal have we been, and what are the expectations for the following week this week?
Yeah, with what we've seen in the past couple of days, combined with the next 4 to 5 days, temperatures will range anywhere from 5 to as much as, you know, 10, 11 degrees above average here for early June. So highs generally, you know, upper 80s and some lower 90s. Minimum temperatures generally in the 70s during this period of above normal warmth.
Turn your attention to other places across the planet. Europe has been really hot, I think.
Yeah, well, they had their historic heat wave back in late May, which, again, some of the earliest heat on record across much of France and England and portions of Spain. Well, the first few days of June have featured a respite in that. We are seeing more indications of another round of heat returning to Western Europe starting next week. And with that, temperatures, again, climbing to maybe approaching record levels. It doesn't look like a repeat of the, you know, historic heat of late May, but even just a few degrees cooler will still result in, you know, record June temperatures. And so that combined with a generally drier pattern in areas of Southwest Europe, like France and Spain, that's quickly becoming more and more of a concern for summer crops, especially corn, as we go through the next few weeks here. So again, it's not all of Europe, but it's primarily countries like France and down into Spain and the Iberian Peninsula in general, where this drier and hotter pattern looks to have some legs.
Thank you much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Rousseau. He's with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen at WILLAG.org. There you can also check out information daily from the agricultural economist, along with the crop scientist and the animal scientist, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.